I'm C.M. Magaña from the Strange and Unusual podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is Paul McGann, the Eighth Doctor. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Go and throw yourself under a bus. I didn't mean to say that. He told me to say that.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I like it with the helmet on.
And Keir Hansen.
And that's why, to this day, I can't eat cotton candy.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 206 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where some scaly jerk decided to put dish soap in the washing machines of all the major cities in the Northern Hemisphere, and now we all get stuck with a lot of mopping up to do. That is, if we don't drown in techno babble first.
It's getting a little thick in here.
I am your mostly dead host, Haley. And in the GPR studios for the Halloween special this week, we have Jay Witten. How are you today, Jay?
I'm doing okay. I forgot the whole zombie thing that we're supposed to have going. Be.
And Keir Hansen, how are you today, Keir?
Doing fantastic, Patient Zero. We're triangulating your position as we speak.
Nuke me from orbit, the only way to be sure.
Exactly. Well, we only have one rocket left, but surprisingly two. We'll get to that in a minute. This week, we are stepping back into the classic rewatch rocket to enjoy the six-part moon base adventure, The Seeds of Death. So with Zoe and Jamie alongside the Second Doctor once again, they are squaring off, well, surprise, surprise, against the Ice Warriors. This time there is a heck of a lot higher body count, some strange costume choices, as to be expected, and some fun with model rocketry. So, yay! I am going to just lob this out there from the get-go and ask for first impressions from Haley, who is just touring the story for the first time.
I was delighted that they used the model rocket as the model and then as the actual rocket. That just brought me such joy.
Hey, you work within the budget constraints you are given. Jay, I know you've seen segments of this before. Have you ever watched the entire story through proper?
I'm not sure. Like, there were things that seemed familiar and then things that were, I'm sure I've seen the vast majority of it, if not the entirety, but it was fun to go back and rewatch it though. I forgot just how special the story was.
Yeah. I will put this out there. I mean, I will never take anything away from this TARDIS team. I mean, this trio is probably one of the most enjoyable ones in the full pantheon of Doctor Who. But this was not what I would consider to be one of their strongest stories. I mean, it has sort of a problematic issue within the writing cycle because Fraser was considering, you know, finding his exit strategy from the program around that point. Terrence Dix had to jump in and assist Brian Hales on the writing for a certain portion of it for that very reason, because they had to do some last minute alterations. You had yet another episode where the Doctor had to take a bit of a break and stay off camera for an episode, as often happens, as we see in classic Who. You could tell that there were some budgetary constraints because they were trying to reuse some footage, make sure they get all their money's worth out of a pretty extensive set design, hopefully reusing some components from previous episodes. I think in particular, And maybe this can be our first point of discussion here, I think this could have functioned better as a four-part story rather than a six.
I can definitely get on board with that. It did seem to get a little bit long at times.
Mm. Some shots that, you know, stretched for 15 or 20 seconds just to watch an ice warrior come walking over a hill, or the model rocket or the satellite shots that ran a little long. You could tell they were kind of stretching it a bit. But when you boil down to it, what about the actual plot line itself? You know, about the ice warriors trying to use this way of leveraging Earth technology in order to be their own means of overthrow.
I like it anytime they do something besides bring a huge army to invade the planet. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I do have a slight problem with the whole, like, let's use this weapon that's only weakness is water on a planet that's 70% water.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so we're definitely going to have to address the science aspect of the pseudoscience to a certain portion. I think the only one that I really kept kind of tripping over was the rocketry aspect of it. You know, they had one functioning rocket. They made such a big deal about saying they're actually using a rocket. Where did you have to pull that out of the mothballs? But then by the time you get around to episode 5, it's like, well, we actually use rockets all the time unmanned to send satellites up. And it was no big deal. That was a kind of a bit of a blip in the writing accuracy. But I think character wise, there were some things that I genuinely enjoyed. And I think a lot of that came from the supporting cast. You know, all the TMAT team, both Earthside and on the lunar base. You know, having to deal with, you've got the perfect sort of defiant, really hyper intelligent Gia Kelly. Her character was fantastic. I loved her. She was take charge. She was like the shades of characters to come. Yes. But Fulsham, the sniveling little, I don't want to die. And he just spent his entire time cowering. My shoulders hurt. Watching this guy crouched and cowering and hunched over for what is it, a total of about an hour and a half's worth of total broadcast time. And he's in this hunched little golem position through the entire thing. It just hurt me to watch him.
I mean, you almost get like a tension headache from watching him cringe so much.
Exactly. Exactly. And they try to give him a bit of a hero's exit at the end, you know, when he tries to share the broadcast. But man, if he had been one of the first ones to get blasted out, I think we would have had a much different story.
Yeah. I mean, him trying to, like, you know, save the day at the very end just kind of seemed like, it's about time. Thank you for ending this.
Well, yeah. It's like the Jell-O spine. It takes a little while to set. But I this is probably the seminal episode for watching Troughton on the run. You know, when you get him on those metal corridors.
Oh God, yeah.
And he's tearing loose through the moon base because he knows the direct route. He looks at the map and says, that seems like a fairly direct route. And then when he gets out there, he's running up this way, down. It's like a Scooby-Doo. He's in this door. He's out that side of the hallway.
Because literally one time you see him like exit screen left and then on the other side of the pillar comes back in across the screen.
Yes, exactly. All they needed was a great saxophone track playing underneath him, a la Benny Hill as he's running around. But then you see the Ice Warrior just doing that slow plod. You know, this is like shades of horror movies to come where people are on a full run through the forest from the slasher who's walking at a leisurely pace and yet still catches up with them.
There was an awful lot of that, yeah. And I want to know what's up with the hallway with the mirrors on both sides. It's just like, hey, random interesting visual. And
yeah. Well, they were trying out. This is something I noticed throughout, and it kind of reminded me as we went through this most recent rewatch. There were some things being done from a directorial standpoint, some choices in camera angles and effects and things that I think were shades of stuff to come. Mm-hmm. A lot of times where they were using a dissolve fade, which was a little unusual for them, or they would do a fade to focus out and blur in the next scene, which I don't really, I think it may have happened in some stories prior, but it really seemed a little bit more pronounced now because it was happening very often on a close-up on like Slar's face. So you see all the scales on his chin and his dental work and so forth. So you're really hyper-focused on that and then it blurs out and pulls you back into the next scene. I thought that was a nice transition. Or they would have camera angles where you'd see somebody who's being posed down by Ice Warrior guards, but you're seeing it from the camera angle, like down behind the guard's foot, like looking between their feet up to the person who's backed up against the wall. So some really kind of interesting angles that they were taking. And then that thing with the infinite hall of mirrors bit, or the force field that they set up, and they just used that metal plate that they were vibrating heavily in front of the camera so it would have that effect to it, I thought was just a kind of a cool practical way to get that, you know, to get that to work. Or even just the way the Ice Warriors were killing their victims. You know, they would do that pinch screen.
Yeah.
Which I'm still wondering at this point how they did that on celluloid. Somebody's going to have to fill me in on how they think that effect was done.
Yeah, but there were some really interesting visuals, and I feel like it. I mean, this had some great, you know, a great look to it. And I mean, some of the special effects were actually really cool for the time. You know, the bubbles with the spores in them were kind of interesting. I mean, it was obviously a balloon, but still.
Sure.
I mean, it was an interesting little thing. And I mean, just some of the visual choices they made were spectacular. I wish the story had, you know.
Yeah. A bit of a give on one side or the other. You'd have certain scenes where the effects were really kind of, you know, interesting for their time, you know, in acknowledgement when they were accomplished. And then, like you were mentioning, the spores, when they first start to develop on the Earth's surface, and you're just seeing this little pocket of these spores starting to grow on just an open field. So, all right, that's kind of a cool effect. And then by the time we get to the end of it, it's just people wading through soap bubbles, you know, gallons upon gallons of them. I guess the inconsistency is what made it feel a little unusual at times. I love the fact that, I don't know if you guys follow it, the Twitter account for Who Labels, which just captures, they must have had a field day with the story, because you get things like heat controls and a giant valve in the middle of a moon base wall. Good eyes on that one, Zoe. Nice job finding the heat controls.
Or the giant video link switch.
Yes.
Ka-chunk.
The big old ball on it with a V painted.
Yeah. I was interested on the moon base for a point in technological advancement where rocketry was rendered obsolete, and yet in that one room where that guy was hiding throughout, there was the big light panel up on over the doorway that said things like incoming rocket telemetry or something like that. I'm like, well, they're paying attention to the rockets, apparently. It seems to be important. But I do love the fact that when he wrote that whole MacGyver routine with the solar dishes to destroy the Ice Warriors. You know, powdered Ice Warrior is actually a delicacy in some places these days. They should have done something with the dust.
Yeah, very like how do the whole Batman 66 movie thing where it's like, you know, they get zapped and then there's a pile of dust on the floor that you sweep up in a dustpan.
Just has a helmet on top of it. I love the fact that they reused all of the variant Ice Warrior costumes that they had been experimenting with in stories past, because they had actually, I think in just the previous story that we had watched with them as part of a rewatch cycle, they were changing the costume mid-story. So you got to see both of them, and they never really addressed it. But this time around, now it's more a matter of, okay, well, these are higher ranking. These are just thugs. This is a Grand Marshal. Oh my God, the Grand Marshal.
I love
the bedazzled Grand Marshal.
Their ranks go from like, okay, you get really cool armor, but then if you get promoted, it's very plain. But if you do good enough, then you can glue little sequins and stuff on it.
But you apparently also get the opportunity to shed the heavy breathing and hissing that Slarr had.
You know what? I think I caught whatever I got from them.
Yeah, you might have caught Slarr's disease. You're sounding pretty nasty, so just turn the heat down.
Okay.
In your apartment.
Clear it right up. Because, you know, I crank a lot of heat here in Arizona.
Yeah. Maybe that's why you're not feeling so hot.
Pun intended, I assume.
But
you know, you did notice at that point, you mentioned the Grand Marshal and everything, and oh man, and Slarr's heavy breathing in that final scene where the Grand Marshal, you know, they lose contact with him. You could barely hear what was going on through Slarr's breathing. It was so bad.
Yeah.
But that is one of the clearest instances on the serious side where the Doctor kills or is responsible for the destruction of a huge number of his adversary with absolutely not a blink of remorse.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's chasing after him with the sundial things. And
yeah, I mean, and then he redirected that entire fleet into the sun.
Yeah.
And just turned around and said, well, you did bad things too. You punched first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was he very much went on the offensive in this one. That stuck out to me too.
Yeah, yeah. But I think I have to wonder to a certain degree, you know, we're talking about kind of tightening these up. If they had gotten this down to a four episode story, I think they might have been able to shed a certain amount of the, well, let's try this idea. Well, that didn't work. Well, no, let's go try this idea. Well, that didn't work. That seemed like the amount of pseudoscience got a little much. You know, if they had stuck to the, you know, if the original plan was to try and figure out a way to roast them out of the moon base, and that had actually seen its way through, but it just took four episodes to get to whatever the way they were going to do that, rather than the giant valve, you know, and that kind of thing. That could have buttoned it up. It seemed just, I don't know, like they tried an awful lot of experimental techniques that weren't necessary.
Really pan out.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary in the long run.
Certainly kept you guessing through the whole thing, though. I mean, I'll admit I got a little bit bored probably in episode two or three. And I mean, I was sitting there watching throughout the rest of it just because I'm like, I seriously wonder what they're going to do here, because I have no freaking clue where they're going with this.
They've gone through all the obvious solutions and now they have to go for the ridiculous.
I just wanted to see where the heck they wound up.
Yeah. No, I thought it got off to a great start. I mean, I loved the fact that, you know, when our TARDIS team decides to volunteer to be the rocket crew to the moon, no spacesuits,
no,
not even like a proper harness, just a lap belt, and they put their hands on their necks, and that's going to protect them from the G forces. You've got this poor Scotsman who's never dealt with any of this stuff before; he's just gripping his neck.
I'm just going to sit in these nice little office chairs and lean back into the doctor's lap.
Well, I wouldn't go too far into his lap because I think he had one leg up in the air.
Yes, yes. When they had their 20 seconds of weightlessness, I loved that. That was a good one. But there's little things that I noticed along the way. Like, and I wonder whether this is just, you know, Moffat being Moffat in the grand scheme of things. You remember, you did note that the first TMAT technician to be killed on the moon base was named Osgood.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who sacrificed himself. Yeah. To try and, you know, and sabotage the panels. I'm wondering if that was a bit of a tribute that Osgood later got named after him. I wonder if they've ever made any sort of a slight reference to try to connect the two. Somebody out there, correct me if they've done that already.
I remember something being tied in with it, but I don't know if it was just somebody picking up on the reference, if somebody said something or what. I don't remember, but I know I've heard that connection before.
Yeah, yeah. As for that whole moon base team, I mean, It just a note for any future alien race that wants to take over a Terran technology later on, just show up there and just keep saying, don't move. Because every time you say, don't move, somebody makes a run for it, shoot them. Then say, don't move again, and repeat as often as necessary until you've taken over the entire base.
Pretty much.
Oh, always a good one. But yeah, I mean, it's a fun story altogether, and you get some great gems out of it. You know, Troughton on the run. You've got, you know, Zoe and Jamie have great moments and so forth. And I do really like the supporting cast as well. You know, the professor, I think is kind of interesting in, you know, when he gets into the whole the shared appreciation between Eldred and the doctor, talking about the history of rocketry and so forth, and they just become two kids in the museum running around. That's a great moment too.
Oh, yeah, that is.
But yeah, I guess it's not a top shelf Troughton episode, but it's definitely not one that I would say, oh, you know, is that what's on tonight? Nah, I'll skip it. I'll come back to it. I'm still going to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, exactly. It was a fun ride, and it was a lot of, you know, it was good to see where a lot of this stuff came from. And anytime you get to watch the Doctor and Jamie and Zoe, you're in for a treat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and they're absolutely at the point in their relationship where they give the Doctor so much grief.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every time they're talking about, you know, the fact that the TARDIS only has to go from Earth to the moon. And he says, well, it's no good at short range
travel. It might overshoot by a few million years or a few million miles.
They just give each other this look. Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't trust this guy to go to the corner for coffee. Nope. Yeah. Yeah. But yep, it's a, and there are some bonus features that you can get in the DVD that, that are a lot of fun to enjoy as well. A lot of the discussion of the technical, the production aspects, a lot of background on the writing so that you can get some kind of understanding about where they were in their headspace in this process within the sixth season here. You know, worth a, if you have it, if you don't own it outright, go to your local library. Grab a copy of it. I'm pretty sure they have it. And if they don't have it, talk to your librarian because probably you don't have to twist their arm very hard to get them to add that to their roster. Librarians are kind of awesome that way. Yeah. So,
well, are we ready to jump into the news?
Defo.
Okay, are you folks familiar with this rumor story that had been going around for the past week?
I've heard about it, but I haven't heard a lot of details about it.
Okay. Well, the reason why there probably wasn't a lot of details was because it turns out the whole thing is bogus. With everything going on with the WikiLeaks and Clinton's emails, and I'm sorry, folks, if we're getting political right now, you know, just like a week and a half before the elections, but it's not really so much necessarily a political thing so much as it is just a comedian stunt. Somebody had started tweeting out there this segment that was apparently taken from one of the lost emails that Russian hackers had exposed and handed to WikiLeaks and so forth about the fact that Hillary had called Doctor Who boring garbage, and the fact that they couldn't come up with better effects on it just proves that that the UK has a failing economy, and on and on and on. And a lot of people latched onto this and said, you know what? I'm either in her corner, but this is a point of contention I've got with her, or I was never in her corner, and this is just another nail in the coffin, and and people took this pretty seriously for a little while through the news cycle, and they didn't do their fact checking.
No.
Nah, I know.
During this election process? No.
No, seriously. So, just to put it to rest, we had a reporter from, which paper was it? The Houston Press? Okay.
Good job, Texas.
You did something. Then he just basically looked through it. There was absolutely no record. You can go through WikiLeaks and you can do an unarc, unindexed search through the content, and there's nothing on there that mentions anything about, you know, some letter from Podesta saying that, that Hillary felt like Doctor Who was like a joke where she had never been told the punchline. So, never happened.
She doesn't think it looks like a web series created by a high school student.
It's a pretty harsh little blurb to put together that whoever this, who was the comedian, this guy, Mike Drucker.
I know, I go to a guy named Drucker for my hard-hitting news.
Yeah, precisely. So, everybody just relax. You know, we'll let her get back to but he'd even like put like little seeds and say, well, she is a fan of Sherlock.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Sherlock too, though. He said it's pretty satisfied with itself and feels more like she's supposed to like it than really actually like it.
I don't know. But all right, so that's just everybody come down off the ledge on that one.
So we got a little bit more news this week about the our newest superhero to come to the Hooniverse, Dr. Mysterio.
Oh, Dr. Mysterio.
So, you know, we've gotten a little bit of information from Stephen Moffat and stuff about this coming up on it. But Moffat and Capaldi actually sat down to discuss the origin of the name Dr. Mysterio.
Right.
And apparently it comes from Mexico.
Yeah. Well, it comes from Capaldi's appreciation of Mexico, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
It doesn't come from a Spider-Man comic?
No, or a luchador, which I was really hoping for. Like they were going to give Capaldi the mask with the eye holes cut out and everything as a token appreciation of his tour of Mexico, but no. Yeah, so I guess what was he was watching a Hartnell episode that had been dubbed in Spanish. And they kept referring to the title character as Dr. Mysterio. Yeah. And he loved it so much. And he loved the way it was pronounced with enthusiasm by the translator that he kept using it on the set so often that Moffat felt compelled to give him the character back. Dr. Mysterio.
I mean, it's hilarious that they're throwing this stuff in there. And, you know, like we talked about last week, it's a Christmas episode, so you can get away with this kind of stuff. You know, you've got a little bit more free range. It's supposed to be more, you know, magical and upbeat and that kind of thing. So it makes sense to throw this in there. And, you know, if you need a superhero, why not?
Well, but because now knowing the backstory, I wanted a luchador. I wanted somebody in the green tights and a cape. I didn't want Superman. Well, I mean, I'll take whatever I get, but still, I mean, with a buildup like that, I want Nacho Libre. You know?
Well, I mean, if you look at Dr. Mysterio's mask, it almost looks kind of luchador-esque.
A little.
Maybe a British interpretation of what a luchador mask is. If you've never actually seen one, but had one described to you by a third grader.
There you go. The detriment of the telephone game internationally. A little lost in translation there.
Not enough color. Not enough rhinestones.
It's like a luchador that goes to Nightwing school.
Yeah, but
last little thing to tag on here, because we're getting really, really close. We are within 2 weeks now before we will be showing up at L.I. Who. They're in a lovely Ronkonkoma, New York. That is a real place, I swear. It's on a map. Look it up. Since we are recording this on Halloween night, it's still quiet in my house because no trick-or-treaters coming around here. There's no sidewalks, and the traffic goes by at 70 miles an hour.
Around a blind corner.
Yeah, right. How much do you want that candy? I've got full size.
Yeah, really? I'll just leave them out here on the center line on the road, and you can just make a run for it. Yeah, so we've got some Halloween-style additions that Ken Deep and Billy Davis and everybody have added to the roster there for those of us who are joining us at L.I. Who. You will get a chance to meet some proper Weeping Angels and Silence, as you always wanted to. Yeah, so some new guests. We've got Sarah Louise Madison, who a beautiful ginger actor who will you will recognize. Well, no, you won't recognize her worth a damn. No, she is probably one of your most iconic Weeping Angels. She will be there, as well as Ross Mullen, who has played a number of Whovian. I won't always say villains, because, you know, while we do recognize him as we wouldn't recognize. I'm going to stop using recognize. Who you will see him credited as both a Silent and as the Wraith from most recent Hellbent, but also played the Teller in Time Heist. And so I wouldn't necessarily call him a villain.
Oh no, no, especially not from Time Heist. No.
Okay.
I mean, so I would use the term antagonist. That's the role he plays in the script.
Yeah. So. Adversary. Well, reluctant. Gun for hire, so to speak. Indentured villain. Forced to be the baddie. And then outside of, obviously, the Whovian scope, a lot of people will recognize him as the leader of the White Walkers from Game of Thrones, if you're into that sort of thing. Some people are, I hear. But yeah, just with thanks to the folks for booking through Alien Entertainment. So please come out. We are going to be busy, busy, busy people, and we want to see a huge contingency out there to support the event and to come say hi to us as we're walking the floors. So do that and get your ribbons from us.
Yeah,
because there will be ribbons to be has.
All right. Well, this has been episode 206 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, yeah, seriously, if your weakness is water, find a different planet.
And this is Kier saying, episode recording completed. Commence preparation for closing theme music to immediately follow. Sarcastic quote by final podcast member.
And this is Haley saying, you know, it's really a shame that Zoe rolled a 1 on her stealth check.
We'll see you guys next week.
I'll see you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2016.
Oh my God, Haley, it's going to take me so much work to edit all these freaking coughs. Do you have a mute button at your disposal? The mixer
is
right next to you.
I do, but it doesn't mute the feed going into the track. It would mute me going to you. Does that help?
Wow. So y'all who are going to be hearing this with all the coughs intact, because I don't have enough time in the day to edit out all of Kaylee's hacks and wheezes.
Sorry.
But yeah, so we've got... Good. We'll restart this whole segment while Haley goes and gets a freaking cup of tea.
That would take 7 minutes, because I almost did it before we started the podcast.
Don't you have an electric kettle?
I have a microwave.
It takes 7 minutes to heat water in your microwave?
4 minutes to heat the water, and then...
4 minutes to heat water to a boil? What kind of shitty Walmart...
Well, exactly. That's what I have. It's a little one, and it's got to be the water that's filtered and cold in the pitcher, which is in the refrigerator, because our tap water is terrible.
Wow. Yeah, rough week for Zoe.
Yeah.
She gets just pinned up against the wall. Oh, hi. Bet you're wondering what I'm doing here right now. Funny story.
That would have been a great time for some Zoe stand-up.
Exactly. So I says to Mabel, I says...
An airline food, am I right, guys?
Anybody ever been to Scotland? I have. Worst experience ever.
Picked up a stray, can't get rid of him.
Never be weightless in a rocket with a man in a kilt. Ba-dum-bum-psh. Good night, Moonbase.
Oh, jeez.
Try the Tang packets.
Tip your ice warrior.
We do not accept gratuities.
I believe the gratuities are included.
Extra charge for sharing plates.
No split tickets.
We do not accept diners club. Oh man, I got a whole theme restaurant going now. This is going to be awesome.
This is why you stay after the credits, guys.
Your maitre d' is covered in bedazzles.